This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. State Senate Leader Phil Berger is under fire for using campaign funds to lease a townhouse. State Board of Elections says it's perfectly legal, but at least one watchdog has concerns. Meanwhile, did Big Tobacco flex its muscle and end an increase in vaping tax that would have generated more than $16 million a year for the state? Plus, legislators met Tuesday to begin the task of redrawing congressional maps. Republicans and Democrats were hoping to agree on a starter map, but did not. Democrats want to start from scratch. Republicans want to use maps created by Common Cause NC. WNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry updates us on that and more. But wait, there's more. Just this morning at the governor's mansion.
Nice to be with you, Frank. Four more vetoes came from Democratic Governor Roy Cooper today. Two of these, the most notable ones, deal with what would have been raises for public school teachers and also pay increases for community college employees and also UNC employees. Now, we had expected the governor to veto these. He called the raises that were in these policy, pieces of policy paltry and has been encouraging the legislature, asking for the legislature to do more for teachers and for these employees of the community college system and UNC system for a while now. Also worth noting that with every mini budget that he signs, he loses a little bit of leverage.
Yeah, we should.
And he didn't have that much to begin with. So yeah, let's take a step back and note that the big budget was approved by the legislature in June. $24 billion spending plan. Cooper axed it. He vetoed it. And as a little bit more context, he issued 28 vetoes during his first 2 years in office. 23 of them were overridden. But voters last November helped Democrats disrupt those supermajorities, those veto-proof margins. So Cooper has now, I mean, as of this morning, issued 14 vetoes. And he has sustained all of them for the time being. So that effectively created an impasse. And over the course of the summer and now the fall, Republicans have been unable to override that veto in both chambers. They took the abrupt and controversial override vote in the House. And what has happened as a result of kind of this budget stalemate is that legislators have moved to this piecemeal or mini budget process. So they've sent him a dozen that have been non-controversial. He signed them. But they then sent him these bigger, more substantive teacher pay raises, and he vetoed them because he says, A, they don't provide enough money for educators, and B, that they he didn't say this, but we know this, it diminishes his leverage right in terms of further budget negotiations. So he vetoed those today, and then we heard almost a little bit of optimism from him because he alluded to a proposal that came yesterday from Senator Berger, a proposal that would have what we've heard to date would be the largest pay increases for teachers, and it sounded as though, I'm going to use the C word here, compromise could be in the cards soon.
There was no condition that the veto be overridden. If they're telling the truth in that press release, I like that. I'm ready to talk about that as a settlement to this.
So that's Governor Cooper this morning talking about a pay proposal that came from Republican leader Phil Berger yesterday. So we'll see. We'll see if they have
any substantive conversations. Well, and it's also interesting. I mean, we take a step to the side on this whole issue. The Republicans thought perhaps if they, you know, again, a piecemeal approach, okay, we can't override the budget veto, but we can get the big issues through because we can put the governor in a position of vetoing teacher pay raises.
Box him in.
Wow, what a headline that would be. The governor says, here's why. There's not enough. And also he is flanked by teachers who he says support his veto in this case.
Yes, I talked to several teachers this morning, and it's worth noting that some of the bigger education groups, such as the NCAE, North Carolina Association of Educators, stands with Cooper at this point. But I talked to some teachers today, and I asked them, hey, how does it feel to effectively be caught in the political crosshairs? Because that's where you are at this moment. And the teachers I talked to said that they're frustrated, that it's overdue, long overdue, for some kind of agreement to be reached. But for now, they remain with the governor and his position.
All right, let's move on now. This complaint that's filed against Phil Berger, the leader of the Senate, the Republican leader of the North Carolina Senate, over using campaign funds to pay for a townhouse that he owns in Raleigh.
That is correct. This was filed by Bob Hall, who's formerly the head of Democracy NC. These days retired from that role, a self-described campaign finance watchdog. Hall has made a lot of complaints over the years pertaining to campaign finance about Republicans and Democrats. He had a hand in putting former House Speaker Jim Black in prison.
Democratic House Speaker.
Democratic, yep. Meg Scott Phipps was a former secretary in the state, took a bribe, and Hall had a role in implicating and bringing further light and transparency to that as well. So he raises this complaint on Wednesday morning and says that Berger is illegally using campaign contributions toward the purchase of a house, the acquisition of an asset. We heard from Berger's folks shortly thereafter, and they said, no. He, Senator Berger, has twice sought approval on this and received approval from the State Board of Elections when it was under Republican control and then subsequently when it was under Democratic control. So what they're saying here is this is above the law. They checked this out and it's okay to go. So one of the questions that emerges is, should it be okay for a lawmaker to use donor contributions to acquire a home?
All right, so let's talk about the blanket approval here and why we would approve anything like this. The idea is lawmakers come to Raleigh, they do their business, they're allowed, an allowance for and they're allowed to use campaign funds to help pay for their stay in Raleigh.
That is absolutely correct. Right. I think we have a huge state here, geographically speaking. So there are House members and Senate members, both parties, that come to Raleigh. They're there Sunday through Thursday, Monday through Friday, and they have places that they rent. And that's above water. That's legal. They do that. What Hall says is that, and other people have kind of joined him in this chorus of this should not be legal. It should not be legal to buy a home to do this. But there are, we have a part-time legislature, but they're here an awful lot. And the thought that you're going to go back to Currituck County or Buncombe County every night is that's not realistic.
Sure. But the idea behind the allowance is if you're going to have to pay rent in Raleigh, you take your campaign money, you didn't spend it on the campaign, you get to apply that to your rent. What Bob Hall is saying is this is an asset. If you're taking your campaign money and investing it, that's going to grow in value and it's yours to keep forever, not what goes to a landlord.
Right. Real estate in Raleigh is appreciating at this point. It's also perhaps worth a reminder that state legislators here make about $14,000 a year, and they get $100 per diem, and that is different than the members of Congress who are making six figures.
It would open the floodgates, however, once if this is permissible, the idea. And as you point out, there are some lawmakers in a very comfortable position and in a position of power. They can raise a lot of money they'll never spend, and so this could be a good investment opportunity for them.
The money in legislative races has proliferated in recent cycles. We see hundreds of thousands of dollars to many different legislative candidates. So, yeah, there's a lot of money. And if this is legal, as it has been said to be here, if this continues, I would be surprised if we don't see not all 170 lawmakers, but I would be surprised if we don't see more lawmakers doing this.
Making those investments. All right, let's talk about vaping. A rare moment in North Carolina legislative, at least these days in the contemporary life, a bipartisan agreement on taxes, of all things, a tax.
There are bipartisan agreements fairly frequently in that building. I'll say that.
When
it comes to taxes, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
This was last week as there was kind of a rush of legislation moving forward. And in a House Finance Committee a week ago Wednesday, there was an amendment added in the morning that would have increased the vaping tax on vaping products in North Carolina. It would have changed how they are administered. It would have, presently it's 5 cents per milliliter of unit that is sold. This would have changed it to 12.8 cents on volume at large. But the tax was added in, and then a few hours later, it was abruptly stripped out. It was stripped out because, in no small part, a lobbyist for big tobacco had it removed, so to speak. There was a meeting between the lawmakers, Democratic lawmakers, who offered the amendment, as well as some Republicans. The lobbyist was at that meeting. The Democrats and some others were surprised that he was there. They weren't told of his involvement and presence at that meeting. And I talked to Republicans and Democrats who were very upset with the process of how this played out. Lawmakers from both parties said it was extremely rare and unusual for the heavy-handedness in which this was removed. It was removed very quickly, and we're not totally sure where this goes from here, but I don't think it's a completely settled or dead issue.
So they might revisit it, because it would have meant something like $16.5 million a year in revenue. And,
of course,
vaping has increasingly now come under scrutiny for the dangers that it poses for people who use it. So it's a dangerous process. We know that now. And this would have meant revenue. It's gone for now.
Nationwide, hundreds of injuries and illnesses, and we've had some deaths as well, right?
Right.
So the proposed tax would have generated about $16.5 million for a newly created tobacco prevention use fund. So right now, there's no $16.5 million, but that is something that if this gets revisited, there's going to be more money potentially going into those coffers.
New congressional maps. Mm-hmm. We have to draw them before 2020, and the process is underway. What's happening?
So this week, this is not court-ordered redistricting. This is, so to speak, court-encouraged redistricting. They issued a preliminary injunction blocking the current maps for the 13 U.S. House seats from being used in 2020. Lawmakers began in earnest this week conversations about how to draw the maps. They pivoted toward a simulation that Common Cause did more than a year ago. Common Cause is not plaintiff in this suit. They're plaintiff in a different suit. But they're in the process of doing maps. We expect to see new maps probably by next week, if not the following week. Right now, it's a 10-3 Republican to Democratic congressional House delegation here from North Carolina that will most likely have the opportunity to get a little closer once new districts are drawn.
We will follow the process, as always, with you, Jeff DeBerry, Capitol Bureau Chief for WUNC. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Links to Jeff's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a Lebanese-American photographer challenges the stereotypes of Arab identity and girlhood. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.